That was music by Canadian composer Kelly Marie Murphy, Judy Lohman with Scintillations, and that was from her award-winning harp concerto, And Then at Night I Paint the Stars. You're listening to Sunday Night at the TSO. I'm Kathleen Kajioka. Well, described as breathtaking and bar talk on steroids, Kelly Marie Murphy has written works for many of Canada's leading performers, and her music has been heard in iconic venues such as Carnegie Hall in New York, the Mozarteum in Salzburg, the National Concert Hall in Dublin, and will soon add halls in Spain, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Germany, and Belgium to that list as the TSO takes her work, Curiosity, Genius, and The Search for Petula Clark on tour at the end of this month. And she joins me now, Kelly Marie Murphy. Welcome to Sunday Night at the TSO.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you're a first-timer with us, so we have a few get-to-know-you questions. Are you ready?
Fire away.
Okay. Do you have a favorite instrument or group of instruments to compose for? Mm.
So my students have heard me say many times calling the cello the king of instruments. So I do love the cello. But from a straight up fun, interesting, engaging, that would have to go to percussion.
Oh, wow. Cool. Favorite comfort meal?
Oh, gotta be pasta. Like a lasagna, ravioli, anything like that. That makes me pretty happy.
Do you have a favorite composer or top three? Who would make your top three?
Wow, that's such a hard question to ask a composer. But so right now, I'm really into Camille Pepin, young French composer, just writing interesting and fantastic pieces. I'm a big fan of Stephen Stuckey, and of course, always and forever, Stravinsky.
What's your dream travel destination?
I waver between anything Scandinavian, like all the fjords and everything, and then shouldn't I go someplace warm? But I think, yeah, still Scandinavian countries hold a lot of interest for me.
What's your favorite area in Toronto?
Okay, so I'm a person that can get lost if I turn around twice, and the official designation is called, believe it or not, directional insanity. And so early in my career, I often had to choose places to stay that were extremely affordable, and I would try to find places where I'm less likely to get lost. So I think one of the first places that I could stay, it was on Church Street, sort of near the Bloor Street area, and it was one of these little like apartment hotels, like you could stay and cook your own food and all of this stuff. So it was convenient. And I don't think I actually got lost there. I could get to the subway stations. I could get to the Royal Conservatory, all of that. So that makes me happy because I've been lost pretty much everywhere I've been in the world.
Tell us a bit about your history with the TSO.
Wow. So it goes back quite a while. I think that the first season that I was performed by the TSO might have been 1996, and that was a piece called From the Drum Comes a Thundering Beat, and it was my first orchestra piece. And then they came back through the CBC with a commission the following season. So 1997, they commissioned my cello concerto. And that was for Shauna Rolston. You know, it started one of these long-term relationships. Every couple of years, I would get a call, you know, do I have a piece that could be performed? Or I've done a few commissions for the TSO over the years, but it's just been a relationship that's been ongoing, and it's extremely rewarding and validating.
Now, before even listening to your music, I'm always struck by your titles, which are invariably very evocative, like Hammer of the Sorceress, Escape from Mind and Body. You know, in a realm where so many works are known by generic terms like sonata, mm-hmm. symphony, divertimento, etc., I'd love to hear your thoughts on the naming process and its importance to you.
It is really important to me, and I did a talk once and was giving some of the titles that I've had, you know, for pieces. And a student said, "Are you allowed to do that?" And I'm like, "Yes, you're allowed to do that." Because, yeah, I could definitely call it piece number one for orchestra, piece number two for orchestra. But to me, it's not very inviting to an audience. I feel like if I'm honest about what I've been considering, then it gives them a leg up, because this is contemporary music and there might be things that are, if not unfamiliar, maybe things that are challenging to hear. So if it's straight and say, this is what I was thinking about, this is what I'm considering, because I really do think that a composer's job is to observe the world around them and then to translate that into something. It's a communication. If I called my pieces just a generic term, I don't know. I don't think people would get into it as much. They wouldn't have something to care about. Like, you know, I give them something to think about because I'm trying to learn something. Sometimes I write about science things, and I'm not a great scientist, but it's my way of understanding the world around me. So I do think it's important to give that context to the audience and to the performer as well.
I'm wondering at what stage the titles come in. Are they like the thesis of an essay that you mold the work to, or are they something that comes partway through the process, like, you know, when a sculptor suddenly realizes what that block of wood is becoming? How does it work?
Yeah, it can be either or. I so appreciate having the concept and the title and then look for the notes. I'm less comfortable when I'm, you know, writing and I've got this stuff, and then the only thing that occurs to me is like, what is this? Why am I writing this? And that's, you know, that's when I go to paintings and poetry and stories and all of this and say, is this what's happening? But for me, it's much more comfortable if I see something or read a poem or something and go, wow, that's a great idea for a piece. In this profession where you have deadlines and commitments and stuff, sometimes I find that I'm writing the notes and then trying to catch up with myself later. But it's much more comfortable to have a fully developed concept before you start getting the notes together.
And let's get to the work that the TSO is going to be taking with them to Europe, which has, again, a fantastic title. Tell us about Curiosity, Genius, and the Search for Petula Clark.
Well, this was a commission for Glenn Gould, what would have been Glenn Gould's 85th birthday, also an anniversary of when he first appeared with the Toronto Symphony. So that was interesting to me because, of course, he's an iconic Canadian pianist, broadcaster, all of these wonderful things. You can't be a musician in Canada and not know who Glenn Gould was. So that was all very interesting. And then I thought the easiest way into something, a project like this about Glenn Gould, would have been obviously to do something connected to Bach. And I typically choose the hard road. So I went for something different. And I thought, you know, he loved broadcasting and he loved all of that type of medium. And I thought, if he was alive today, would he be on Insta? You know, would we be friends on Facebook or something like that?
I can only imagine what he would post.
Yeah, exactly. At all hours of the night and day. I'm interested in people. I'm a fervent introvert, but I can observe people. And so it got me thinking about who was this man. And so I interviewed one of his longtime friends and recording engineers, Lauren Tulk. We sat in the Royal Conservatory Cafe one afternoon for a couple of hours and just, who was Glenn Gould? And, you know, we think of him as a genius and maybe quirky and all of those types of things. But he just thought he was a regular guy with, you know, some musical talent. So I found that fascinating. One of the things that Lorne brought for me to listen to was the first radio documentary that Glenn Gould had done. And that was called The Search for Petula Clark, which was enormously interesting. I just thought, wow, like, why? What's behind all of this? Again, it was like this staggering intellect applied to popular music. And I thought that that was just so fascinating. He would go on these road trips. I think he had a cottage up in Marathon, Ontario, which is, 1,100 miles or something like that away from Toronto where he lived. And so he would be driving for quite a while, and he loved to play games. And he had this game of chasing relay stations, radio relay stations. Mm-hmm. So this was like every hour or so, it would be news on the hour and then 55 minutes of whatever the Billboard chart, popular music. So he would try and get to these relay stations so that he could hear Petula Clark's Who Am I? At the end of this documentary, he says something like, after several hundred miles of this exposure to Petula Clark, I checked into the hotel at Marathon with plans to contemplate Petula. And I thought,
oh, wow.
It's just so amazing, right? So that's where this piece came from, sort of the man behind it. He had such an amazing curiosity for a number of things. He clearly was a genius, and then his little crush on Petula Clark. I just thought that was fascinating.
So in the work, how do you reflect this game?
I think you would hear landscapes, that he would have been encountering. So pre-Cambrian rock, Canadian Shield, mining camps, stuff like this. So it's rugged. And then I feel like it's almost like he's the leading man and the superhero of this, trying to chase this. So it gets quite dramatic. It starts mysteriously, I would say, kind of soft and high sound solo flute. And then it just gathers and gathers and gathers these points in the middle, because of course music has to go somewhere and it has to have contrast. And so you can't have just all of the dramatic stuff being fast and loud. And so I bring in these softer moments, which is maybe more the human side of Glenn Gould that some people got to know. And I would have loved to have been one of those people. I think he would have been just an interesting person to talk to.
What does it mean to you to have had this work recorded by the TSO and to have them take it on tour?
Amazing. I grew up on military bases across Canada and never in a million years would have imagined, something of this enormous impact happening to me, little old me, So I remember after the premiere of the piece in 2017, I thought, okay, you've done it now. You've written this really quirky, odd piece, and that's that. And then, lo and behold, Gustavo really liked it. And then he decided to put this on a CD with none other than one of my top three composers.
Oh, right, Stravinsky. Right.
It's just awesome. And then to be able to go on tour with the orchestra and hear all of that. And it's not just about my piece. It's about seeing the orchestra flourish, hearing them in rehearsal and all of the concerts that they'll be doing and just reveling in that. And the fact that I'm part of it is quite amazing and absolutely thrilling.
You're going to get to hear it in so many different venues. That's going to be quite exciting, I imagine.
Yeah. Oh, exciting is on that. It's right there along with terrifying, isn't it? Because, you never know how an audience is going to respond to something. That's just part of the job. You can't know everything about every situation, so that's fine. I'm always interested to be there when an audience is figuring something out. It's a bizarre situation. Sometimes I'll be sitting in the audience, and of course, nobody really I don't know if they expect the composer to be there or what the case is. And so I'll hear things like they're reading my bio and saying, "Oh my God, she's still alive." And things like this. And I'm sitting right in front of them. And then so it's just this very odd situation, but I'm really looking forward to it. And the TS plays it so well. They're familiar with it, they know it, they are enthusiastic about it, so the audience will get that. So I'm thrilled.
Well, I want to thank you so much for speaking with me tonight, and toy, toy, toy for the tour.
Oh, thank you
Love to
so
be a
much.
fly on the wall there, but it's really, really going to be fantastic. And well, Kelly Marie Murphy, safe travels.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. Take care.
That was Canadian composer extraordinaire Kelly Marie Murphy. Her work, Curiosity, Genius, and the Search for Petula Clark, goes on tour to Europe with the TSO later this month. But you can hear it for yourself at home at Roy Thomson Hall, January 22nd and 23rd. As part of the program, Bruce Liu plays Rachmaninoff 2. For tickets and information, go to tso.ca. Let's hear from the man who hunted down Petula Clark on the airwaves in his car. Here he is, Glenn Gould.